Why are some people so willing to help while others seldom help? Hello, this is Good Word. I'm David Thomas, your host. Thank you for joining us. We are talking this quarter about restoration, a biblical term that refers to the work that God is doing to try and restore the brokenness of our planet that came about because of sin. And I'm happy once more to have my conversational partners, Daryl Bigger and Brant Berglund, two colleagues from the School of Theology. And gentlemen, that question that I asked strikes me with some force. Why is it that some people are very willing to help and others seem never willing to help? Any ideas on that?
Well, what it triggers in my mind is a wish, and I think with some substance, that it may not really be true, that it isn't that people are unwilling to help. It's I would rather think that it's that they're unaware of others' need for help because they're too self-absorbed.
Hmm.
And maybe those who are willing don't always know the best way, and they're paralyzed by their analysis of a situation, mm-hmm. just inaction. Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say those two things sound like excuses to me.
Yes, they
it feels
they
like
do.
It when I make it.
Yeah. It certainly is true that some people are so seared that they cannot comprehend or appreciate other people's needs. That's certainly the case. I believe in the power and the presence of evil. But at the heart of most human beings, I think there is that little vestige of the goodness of God that under the right circumstances triggers some awareness of their wish to be helpful.
Yeah, I heard a while ago the man who was in charge of Loma Linda Medical Center there when the San Bernardino shootings took place, and I was very moved by what he said. He talked about that experience. He talked publicly about it, but one of the things that stuck most in my mind is that people from all over the place called in with help, but some people sent sandwiches. Did you hear him say that?
Yes.
They sent food. They have no idea what's going on. They don't even know if people need food, but they send. They call some caterer or something there in the area and say, would you please take a plate of sandwiches up to the hospital, you know. And I that triggers another memory here, is that we had a woman on our campus who was in the middle of the Ebola crisis. She came to speak about that. Mm-hmm. She was a young woman who was a physician, an American doctor. She was working in Africa on a mission project when the Ebola thing broke out. And I was moved to tears by her description of the incident where when the Ebola virus, when the epidemic broke loose and people just began to come in droves, that some of the other hospitals shut down. And she and the staff in that little hospital gathered around and they said, look, we could shut down and protect ourselves. And they made a deliberate decision not to shut down, even though they were putting life and limb at risk. Wow, that's powerful. If I may be bold enough to answer my original question, why do some people – I think that some people are naturally inclined to be helpful. Mm-hmm. But I hope at a deeper level it's because of the influence of the Holy Spirit that they have allowed themselves to come under and be listening to. And that's mm-hmm. not an indictment of what you said. It's just a reality. I think that if we see the plight of human beings from a point of view of an eternal God who loves us, I think we see the refusal to inconvenience ourselves and the reluctance to be sympathetic diminishes some. It doesn't go away, but anyway, I want for us to look at this verse again, Matthew 9:35. Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in the synagogues, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom and healing every disease and sickness. Here we see again that with Jesus, sympathy is not just an expression of words, but it actually is actions. Daryl, do you have a Bible there? Do you mind looking at Mark 5, verses 22 and onward? And we can't read all these verses, but you might be able to pick up a few little things here. This is a multi-tiered story of Jesus providing help. First to a ruler of the synagogue whose little daughter was dying of a fever. A story that was interrupted, of all things, by a woman who was in distress, her own health was in jeopardy, who came and touched her garment, wanting to be healed, which brings about another whole story. Anyway, Brent, it looks like you were ready to say something about those stories.
I'm fascinated by the story here in Mark, because Mark uses a literary feature called sandwich stories, where he'll begin telling one story and then he'll jump to a second one and then he'll go back to the first one. He has about six of these throughout the book of Mark.
I've never heard that expression, sandwich stories.
In fact, my PhD dissertation advisor wrote his dissertation on the sandwich stories in the Gospel of Mark, but this story is found like this in the other Gospels as well. So it maintains its sandwich flavor, which gives me an indication that maybe this is authentically the way in which it happened. Hmm. And Jesus stops from healing an acute case to heal a chronic case, and the acute case dies. And it's a significant.
Wow. You know, that reminds me of a study that was done years ago. A person, they were examining whether or not people would help if they were in a hurry or if they had a more relaxed time. Students were sent across campus to run an errand, and a supposed injured person was placed in the way. The students who were given a deadline that they were in a rush to get across campus did not stop to help the injured person. The one who had plenty of time stopped to help. So the rush for the acute, interrupted by the chronic, is counterintuitive.
It is, and if Jesus were doing triage in an emergency room, he'd be fired.
Yes, that's right.
And yet these stories are tied together. The woman with the flow of blood for 12 years, you know, hemorrhaging, and the little girl who died. The woman with the flow of blood had suffered for 12 years, and the little girl was 12 years old. And so these literary ties between the two stories bring us together.
Does Jesus treat that interruption by the woman who touched his garment as an intrusion? I mean, is it an inconvenience? It doesn't seem that way.
He's the one who stops the procession. Who touched me? She tried to get away quietly. And as the disciples enter the dialogue, well, this crowd is pressing around you. What do you mean, who touched you?
But I've always been intrigued by I'd never really seen it as the critical versus acute, and the acute patient dies. I mean, the chronic. But it has always struck me that he did not treat that woman as an inconvenience. He turned and focused on her and helped her as she needed help in that moment.
Isn't that a great encouragement to us, that in God's eyes, a need is a need? And it doesn't matter whether it's an emergency or a long-standing one. A need is a need, and God's going to address that.
And maybe it's our problem with how we relate to needs. We hierarchy them according to our humanness. And for Jesus, death is not a problem. The end of life is not the biggest problem.
And you know, what is more difficult to deal with, a chronic problem or an acute problem? In terms of helping someone. Mm. Yikes.
We tend to lose hope more with chronic issues, don't we? Long-standing.
Yeah, but they're also more persistently aggravating because they come every week. You know,
debilitating over the long term.
But the good news is that in both of these stories, they both end happily.
Mm-hmm.
They both end with joyful outcomes.
Hmm. You know, there's another story in the lesson we should look at here, the very famous one of Dorcas or Tabitha. And it's interesting, by the way, that this woman is called in Scripture a disciple. She's not just called a follower. She's actually a disciple. The same words used to describe others. And I've long been intrigued with this story because it says specifically there that she had care for the widows of her town. The widows in that era being some of the most vulnerable people. Okay, and I'm pretty sure that some of those widows were within her own community of faith, but many of them were not. And yet she cared for them, right? And the remarkable story is that the level of care that she provided was so profound that when she died, the people grieve and they call, who is it, Peter, I think, to come back. And God works a miracle and restores her to life. And I've thought to myself, wow, who else do I know whose life and ministry for the downtrodden was so cogent that it warranted a restoration of life? Wow, that's pretty big in my mind here. So, any thoughts on that? Who are the widows of today? Well, there are obviously some widows, you know. Mm-hmm. But I've often thought that single mothers are the widows of today. They are powerless. Mm-hmm. They are often mistreated, taken advantage of.
Overworked, at wit's end, trying to manage everything alone. Yeah.
You know, I'm a married man, and so in my house there's a division of domestic responsibilities, but I learned from some sons who live on their own that when you're by yourself, you do everything. The lawn, the car, the laundry, the cooking, the dishes, you know, there's no division of responsibility. You only have one income, and so the level of vulnerability can be very high. But here Dorcas found a way with her own hands and time to care for people to the point where it became notable enough that God restored her back to that community. I think that that's a powerful motivation, not that any of us would be restored to life again, but I wonder in how many communities Christians are known for that kind of thing.
Well, she left a legacy. According to Acts 9, it says, this woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. I wonder if such a legacy could be left on my tombstone when I go.
Yeah. Yeah, I've known some people like Dorcas, and in fact, one of them I knew ran a community service center for 41 years, 41 consecutive years, and she provided food for the hungry and clothing for the destitute and baby blankets for the newborns, and it was funny because one day when I came to her establishment, she was busy throwing some people out. And I said to her, I said, what was that all about? She says, well, I've known these people for years. They come by here and take stuff from us, and then they sell it and finance a winter trip to Florida for vacation. This was up in Massachusetts, you know. So she had enough history to know the story, and I was very surprised. She told them to get off the property, and I thought, whoa, they come for help, and you chase them out like that. But I guess it's kind of like
Have either of you ever wondered why it was that Dorcas was resurrected? Did she not have an assistant ready to take over after her?
I have wondered that.
Had she not prepared for the future? Was this just a way to highlight her example of service to other people in a profound
way? Because there
are
aid societies around the world that are named after her, you know, yes. Dorcas societies.
And this says nothing about her mentoring anybody, like Titus commands in the second, third chapter of Titus, that the older women should raise the younger women, train them.
Yeah.
But it underscores the kind of work she was doing. That seems to me to be the primary lesson from her resurrection. It was.
Because she kept on doing those things after.
Yes.
And I think here we see an example of somebody who emulated Jesus, who it said at the beginning, we pointed out, was not just talking about people's needs, but actually doing something about it. And actions do speak louder than words. So. Thank you, gentlemen. This has been good. I feel like, to some extent, we're going over the same ground, but week by week it gets a little deeper in our minds. So thank you for being here. My thanks to David Olson, our engineer here at the station. And my thanks to those of you for listening in for the Good Word. I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.